Tech Talk on RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello and welcome to Tech Talk from RNIB Connect Radio. I'm Callum Stoneman. Tech Talk is our weekly look at the world of technology, funnily enough, from a blind and low vision perspective. If you want to get in contact with the show, please do. We always love to hear from you. techtalk@rnib.org.uk is the email address you need. That's techtalk@rnib.org.uk. This week, we'll be hearing about the plans for RNIB's next technology fair in Northern Ireland. Hubert has been hearing about how one listener is using technology to help them living with diabetes and much more besides. Hubert Pavalkovich and Jackie Brown are joining me this week. Let's see what's grabbing your guys' attention this week. Hubert, how are you?
Well, what grabbed my attention is entirely your fault, actually, to be honest. You got me onto Todoist. I started using it and I love it.
Yes.
It is fantastic because it helps me manage both my work and personal tasks. I'm obsessed with it. I use it for everything. So Todoist is a kind of to-do / reminders / calendar app where it's a task manager, basically, where you basically set various tasks, whether they are things you need to do or appointments you need to attend, and you can tick them off, basically. It helps to keep you on track as well. You can add reminders to make sure that your phone shouts at you when you need to do something, and making sure you do it as well. And I like challenging the natural language aspect where I say, add this work preparation task every day except for Saturday and Friday, for example. It doesn't work that well with that particular part, but that is quite challenging, to be fair. But I love it. You got me onto it. It's your fault.
Have you got it getting your goals as well? Because I know you love that sort of thing. Have you set all that up?
Yes. I love the streaks, the karma points. They are fantastic. I just like looking at these numbers. It's brilliant. And I like how you can kind of add projects and subsections of subsections. It, for someone that likes to keep things organized and kind of grouped, it is really good.
Yeah.
I love that you can add calendar events as well. I wish you could add duration, but I've only found the switch to add duration, but not to actually set one. So there's a few little things. I like the little natural language thing where you can actually kind of say, "Oh, production meeting every weekday at 10. And then I try to kind of challenge it and see if it can do complex schedules.
That issue with the duration thing that you mentioned where you can go into a duration but then not actually set it, that has cropped up quite recently. That I'm not really sure what's going on there. But they are pretty good with accessibility, so I'm pretty sure that will be fixed at some point. If not already, to be honest, by the time this goes out, because they do get onto stuff pretty quick.
It doesn't put me off using it. I still absolutely really like the app because it allows me to group everything into where it needs to be. And you can really customize how things are displayed. So you can take out things out of your tab bar and put things in. You can move things from your menu bar. It's really good and so customizable.
It has made me realize how kind of petty I am in some ways, though, because you mentioned the streak. I'm currently on I think it's a 40-day streak at the minute. But that's because there was a time a few weeks ago where I had actually done a couple of tasks, but I forgot to tick them off until the next day. It was the next day that I realised, and therefore I lost my streak. I'm like, no, come on.
Oh, dear, oh, dear.
And I looked it up because I thought, well, it's still got these tasks in as yesterday, so will it kind of pick up on that and maybe do it that way, whether it's supposed to do that or not? I don't know, but would it do that? And it doesn't. But there were people saying if you do that, you can open a support ticket and ask them to kind of reboot your streak so that it keeps going. I'm like,
no, that's
quite
now.
Tempting.
Come on,
What prompted the switch, though? Because you've been quite happy with Habitica, haven't you?
Curiosity. I kept hearing about the app and I thought, well, let's try it out and see if I can do it. And the good thing is Habitica is a little bit more basic. So if you want to do kind of track your work tasks and stuff like that, it's a bit tricky. But when, as with Todoist, you can actually group things. You've got, you can have projects, and in each project you can have sections and subsections. And I think, to me, for work particularly, that is quite important. And you can have work projects, you can have personal things. I think it's that kind of thing where you can have a bit more customizability sort of thing. I don't know if that's a word, but it is now. So, it was just general curiosity. I like trying these apps and seeing how they compare to what I already have. And so far Todoist is being very much used.
Very nice. And if you can, if you've got a way of searching back through the podcast, because this was a few months ago now, I did do a little demo of Todoist as well, if you're interested. It's changed a little bit since then, but not much. It's still enough to get you started. Jackie Brown, what have you got for us this week?
I have discovered something about audio docking, a really useful feature within voiceover settings. You go to audio, and in there you can choose audio docking. What it does is it allows you, if you set it up, depending which way you do, but it allows you to listen to voiceover and anything like music or that in the that you have on, say you're listening to Spotify or something, and you get a message on your phone. If audio docking is turned off, then it's going to be really difficult to hear voiceover. But what it does, if it's turned on, is you can hear voiceover speaking, so you can reply or read your message, but the music in the background goes quieter. When I got my new phone recently, I had obviously come across with the settings from what the phone I had before, and I was noticing that on calls, if I turned up the caller seemed to be pretty quiet, and I used the volume up, and I thought, there's just something not quite right about this. So I went into voiceover settings, and I went to audio docking, and I found I had it ticked for when speaking. So I tried it, turning it off. Now, I know that the disadvantage is that if you are playing something and you want to hear voiceover, it's very difficult, because it won't silence the background. But I noticed a huge difference on phone calls. I was able to hear the call. I didn't have to keep turning up the volume on the call. And of course, if you do anything like that with clicks or anything, then that immediately kicks in the audio docking. So there is a setting in there that you can have off, which is what I've done for now, when speaking, and there's also one for always. So I just wonder how the rest of you have got on with audio docking, whether you like it, whether you don't. I'd be interested to hear people's comments. I at the moment have turned it off, because it was really annoying me on a call.
I do like it, but I have had that problem where, yeah, on calls, it just, voiceover just goes a bit all over the place, I guess.
And the caller, it's quite hard to hear them sometimes, because the audio docking is trying to kick in. So for now, I've turned it off, and I'll just have to remember to maybe turn it on or whatever. If I'm previewing an album, you know, you can go into iTunes, and you can, if there's a new album, you can preview the tracks. But of course, if you tap on the preview and you've got audio docking off, you cannot hear voiceover until that preview stops. It's really difficult, and that's where audio docking is useful, because it means you can have music or something in the background, and you can hear voiceover. But it has so many annoying other features that I've just put it off for now.
Yeah, I've not had that issue myself. I've set it up so it's kind of talks. Audio docking only kicks in when voiceover actually speaks. I can't remember what that setting's called. I think it might be what you've actually said. But I like it, because when I'm listening to something, if I need to quickly reply to a message or check something, I don't need to pause the audio.
Yeah.
So for me, audio docking is essential. However, on the Apple TV, for example, I've got it turned off completely, because I very rarely use voiceover when I'm watching something. So I think it all depends to use cases.
Yeah.
For me, on the phone and on the iPad, it's quite essential, I'd say, and on the Mac. But on devices like the Apple TV, you can probably live without audio ducking. It just really depends to your use case. If you're listening to audio but you want to do something, then yeah, you need to really have it on. You can't really, unless you've got a voice that's so loud that it will drown out the audio. But I'm not going to lie to you, that's apart from Daniel, maybe that's not going to always happen with most voices.
Yeah. It is a tricky one, but for now, I've turned it off to see how I get on calls, and I've had a call since I turned it off, and my goodness, what a difference! So I'm not sure why that is, but because it is designed to dull any background noise when there is somebody speaking or voiceover, but it was driving me mad. So we'll see.
A tip though you can do though, if you want to kind of go between it being on and off, depending on what you're doing, you can add it to your rotor so you can kind of easily switch it there. I don't know if you can do a gesture for it, but you can definitely put it in the rotor.
What you can also do is decrease or increase the amount of audio that's ducked, which I think is something you've not messed with enough. But you can actually set if the audio is ducked a lot when you're using VoiceOver, or only a little bit. So that might also be worth keeping in mind.
Well, I've been
Yeah,
buying
right.
things recently. I bought myself a new keyboard, a new Bluetooth keyboard. But what this one does, it's one of these foldable keyboards, which I've always been a bit skeptical of. I've felt a couple in the early days, and they've always felt
Me
like they're
too.
just gonna fall apart. But this one, I mean, it's still not. It's really good quality for a foldable keyboard. It doesn't feel like it's just gonna, disintegrate on me. But this one, it folds up really nice, really small, can very easily fit into, I don't know about pocket sized. I don't think you can get any QWERTY keyboard that's pocket sized, but certainly fits in a small bag easy enough. So it folds up really, really small. But you unfold it, and it unfolds into three parts. So you've got your usual keyboard with your keys and your function keys and your arrow keys, but it's also got a number pad as well on the right hand side. So it's a kind of desktop style keyboard that it unfolds into. And this is the thing that made me get it. So portable for a start, so easy to just slot in my bag, take to work with me. But it also connects to up to three devices at the same time. And you've got three, so you've got your number pad, you've got a couple of shortcut keys. So one of them takes you into Windows settings. One of them is like a print screen option for taking a screenshot. And then you've got three kind of longer buttons, so very easy to feel. And they're just device one, device two, and device three. So you pair the device to each channel, very similar to the Orbit Writer, I guess. So you pair devices to all three of those, and then you just tap the button within about a second. It's connected to that device and off you go. It's controlling it. If you want to switch back to another one, so you want to switch back to from your phone to your laptop, just tap the button that that's paired to. Wait a second, if that, it kicks in really quickly. And then there you go, you're on that device. It's really nice.
Who makes it?
So this is the ProtoArch keyboard. So that's ProtoArch, and it's a capital A in the middle of that. I think the keyboard model is the XK01. £34 that cost me.
That's not bad.
No, it's not actually.
It's really good. It's
Good
because for me, I'm
man.
always flicking between my work laptop, my work phone, which is a Samsung, because it works across all operating systems. So I'm always flicking between my work laptop, my work phone, and my personal phone, but don't tell the boss. So it's just nice to have. You can sort of do this with the Mantis. That's one of the reasons I like the Mantis, because it's one keyboard for everything.
That's what I love
But
about
it's
it.
just the portability of it sometimes if I want to travel a bit lighter. Kind of like what you were saying a few weeks ago about the Orbit Writer and the Brilliant devices. If you want to have something that's a bit smaller, if you want to travel with kind of less stuff, that does make it easier, because obviously the Mantis is not big, but it's about the size of a laptop, really, isn't it? Width-wise and lengthwise.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there you go. That's what I've got. If you're interested in a little keyboard that's easy to take with you, then I can definitely recommend that one. So just to give you that that model again, it's the ProtoArch XK01. So have a look for that. Be careful because there is an XK01 Plus, I think, or it might be the XKM01, and that also has a touchpad with it. So that might be useful if you use a touchpad with your laptop or whatever, but I think most of us would just be interested in the keyboard only version, which is about £20 cheaper. Okay, cheers guys, stick with us. This is Tech Talk. RNIB's Technology Fair returns to Northern Ireland in February 2026. Howell Davies has been hearing about the plans for the event.
When it comes to understanding the world of technology, sometimes nothing beats having a face-to-face chat. Part of the reason why RNIB Northern Ireland's Tech Fair events have been so popular. Plans are already underway for the next Tech Fair in February 2026, and joining me now to explain a bit more from RNIB Northern Ireland is PR and Communications Manager Laura Cummings. Laura, welcome back to RNIB Connect Radio.
Thanks so much for having me, Harold.
Well, for people who haven't made it out to a Tech Fair event in the past, tell us what they're all about.
Yes, of course. So the RNIB Northern Ireland Technology Fair is now coming into its third year. We kicked it off a couple of years ago. We didn't realise it was going to be as big as it was. It's basically now it's become the biggest showcase of assistive technology products for blind, partially sighted people in Northern Ireland. And we're so delighted that it's just grown from strength to strength each year. So it's a free event for people to come along, and they come along, they spend the day. We have, as I said, all the latest assistive technology for blind, partially sighted people. Locally, internationally, we have a series of tech talks scheduled throughout the day, which focus specifically on certain areas. And they were extremely popular last year. People were coming along specifically to hear the tech talks that we had on offer. For example, we had NaviLens come over from Spain. Anybody's not familiar with NaviLens, it's a wayfinding code similar to a QR code, helps people navigate their way around places independently. So we had the guys come over for that. We had talks on AI, on apps, Braille and technology, also technology to support people in their jobs and to get into employment. As you know, there's only 1 in 4 blind or partially sighted people in paid employment at the minute, and we want to change that. So yeah, the tech talks were huge. The tech fair, as we affectionately now refer to it these days, takes place this year on the 11th of February 2026. We're taking it up to Derry, Londonderry this year. Last year we had it in Lisburn, and the year before that we kicked it off in Belfast. So the idea is to bring it round the country, and I think that's very important, to bring it to where people are. It's not always fair to expect people to come to the big city, and we want to take it out to the wider cities. You know, we want to encourage people to get out and come to us as much as possible. We have shuttle buses that will run from local train and bus stations to take people to and from the event throughout the year. And yeah, people just had so much fun last year, so we're really hoping to replicate that and strengthen that for this year's event.
The tech fairs in Northern Ireland always have a great atmosphere. The next will be no different, I'm sure. Which exhibitors are already confirmed for Wednesday, the 11th of February?
Yeah, we were actually so delighted with the response. I mean, obviously, we had our exhibitors from last year. You know, you had the likes of Optilec, Sight and Sound, Dolphin, Humanware, VisionAid. So it's testament to the success of last year's that those guys have signed up for this year. So we're still, registration is still open, and we're promoting that, but we really haven't had to promote it too hard. Those kind of technology assistive tech exhibitors are coming to us, which we're delighted about. But we also, as well as assistive technology, you know, the tech fair is very much a gateway to not only all of RNIB services. You know, overall, we had attendance and a presence from every team within Northern Ireland, within RNIB, never mind in RNIB in Northern Ireland. That was very important to us. You know, we wanted to use this as a gateway to showcase exactly what RNIB do and how they do it so well. So, you know, tech fair allowed people to come in and explore all our services and all our teams. But then likewise, we also had presence and will do this year again from our partner organisations. You know, we have Guide Dogs, we have Deaf Blind, we have Angel Eyes, Blind Veterans. That's very important to us. We have great relationships with our charity partners. So yeah, it's trying to just meet everybody's needs and just have everybody in the one place and all this support, engagement and information under the one roof on the one day.
And how different do visitors find the experience? Getting the opportunity to get hands-on with a piece of accessible tech in person instead of maybe just reading up about it online?
Absolutely, Hal. I think that was very important for people to come along in person, to physically meet with these tech leaders, the experts in their field, have that one-to-one support. I mean, as well as the exhibitors, we also had the tech surgery, which was a huge hit. And again, it's, you know, just helping people out. Maybe it's with apps on their phone, maybe it's just accessibility features on their phone, on their iPad, on their PC, laptop, whatever. Showing people, you know, firsthand how to navigate through the world of technology, because it can be quite daunting. So people find that extremely beneficial, and it was the personal aspect of being there present on the day of the technology fair. And again, tech surgery will be running again this year. We wouldn't dare get rid of it. It was vital. We also have the likes of I don't know if you're familiar with a new healthcare app called MyCare. It has launched over Northern Ireland this year. It's a portal. It's a patient portal where people can go on and access their results, their information, their appointments, and their healthcare information. We don't have an accessible healthcare information standard in Northern Ireland, so this is really important for us in the blind, partially sighted people can go on there and choose their communications preferences for the first time. So hopefully they won't be receiving hospital appointment letters in a format they can't read. But the point I'm making is the MyCare team will also be on hand there on the day. Again, it's that one-to-one support that people are crying out for. So we're delighted to have the MyCare team up to Tech Fair in February. So it's about that one-to-one contact and guidance that people really need.
And what's the accessibility like at the Foyle Arena? How easy is it to get to and to get around?
Yeah, it's fantastic, and we couldn't fault it. We're heading back up again next week to do an additional site visit, but it is everything you could expect and more, and the team up there are so helpful and working with us, but we will make sure that all accessibility angles are always covered. That's first and foremost for us. But in terms of support on the day itself, Hal, we will be there in numbers, and not just with RNIB staff. We are so thrilled that once again we will have a fleet of volunteers on hand to work as sighted guides and as meet and greet volunteers. And what's nice about that is that last year we have enlisted the volunteer and help of Queen's University medical students, who not only were given us invaluable help on the day, but they were able to learn so much about interacting with blind, partially sighted people, how to guide appropriately, how to interact properly. Those are skills that they'll take forward in their career, and they'll take them home to their friends and families and spread that message as well. You know, we're trying to create societal change at the end of the day. So we are delighted that we have also got a huge number now of student volunteers from the local college up there, Northwest Regional College, who we have a great relationship with, and they are going to be on hand as well to make sure that everybody can receive that guiding if they wish. We do encourage people, if they need a sighted guide, bring someone of their own accord if they can do. Some people prefer that, but if not, you know, we have you covered.
Do people need to book tickets ahead of time for the event, or can you just turn up on the day?
You can turn up, of course. It is a free event. However, we are trying to track numbers, etc., just to make sure that, you know, we're catering for everybody. So there is a link to register as an attendee. It's on Eventbrite. I'll send through all these details as well for people to check. And also for exhibitors to register as well. So, yeah, we're just trying to monitor closely numbers this year. But numbers wise, we had over 500 blind, partially sighted people through our doors last year at the event, which was amazing. You know, we had nearly 30 exhibitors, you know, 25 volunteers, as I say. So the numbers speak for themselves.
How can we keep up to date with announcements and news about the tech fair on Wednesday, the 11th of February?
Well, we will be inundating every channel at our disposal, Hal, including your good selves, but also the RNIB Northern Ireland social media channels, Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, and Blue Sky. And we'll be issuing media as well. We will also have all this information on the Northern Ireland section of our website. But this is not exclusive to residents of Northern Ireland. This technology fair is for everybody. So, you know, everybody is more than welcome. I know you were good enough to come along last year as well on the day.
Absolutely. Well, we'll look forward to hearing lots more about the 2026 RNIB Northern Ireland Tech Fair. But for now, RNIB Northern Ireland's PR and Communications Manager, Laura Cummings. Thanks for joining us on RNIB Connect Radio.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
2025 is almost over, and on A Little Alternative, we've played countless songs from many, many different records. But there can be only one A Little Alternative album of the year. Join me, David Hogg, on Boxing Day, the 26th of December from 8 o'clock, as we count down the top 20 albums of 2025 to see what will be crowned the A Little Alternative album of the year. Catch the 2-hour A Little Alternative Album of the Year extravaganza Boxing Day, the 26th of December from 8pm and Saturday the 27th of December from 6pm, only on RNIB Connect Radio.
If you have a technology question, why not ask the Tech Talk team? Email now, techtalk@rnib.org.uk or tweet at RNIB Radio. Using the hashtag AskTechTalk.
You are listening to RNIB Connect Radio now. With World Diabetes Day this week, we thought we will talk about diabetic-related sight loss conditions and kind of how the two can sometimes mix. Joining me today is Lee Mercer. Lee, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Hubert.
So let's find out, first of all, you know, what is your sight condition, and tell us a bit about that and how you got diagnosed and kind of your early days of sight loss.
I have what's called proliferative diabetic retinopathy, which is a lovely mouthful, but then most sight conditions are. Basically, the diabetes, sort of as a result of complications from diabetes and problems in the bloodstream, it has damaged the vessels in the backs of my eyes, which caused hemorrhages, which then have damaged other parts of the eye. I've had diabetes for a number of years. I was diagnosed in 2001, and the sight loss condition didn't occur until 2018. So I'd had diabetes for a long time. I'd lived with it. I managed the condition. It became part of my life. Just something else to think about from day to day. But sight loss wasn't something that I had ever really considered. It was a known complication, but like possible complication, but it wasn't something that I ever thought would affect me, because I suppose you don't dwell on those sort of things a lot of the time.
As you said, you know, sight loss is not something you've always considered, but when it eventually came to it and you had to adapt to living life with kind of limited vision, how did you adapt? What did you find most helpful at the time?
I think the most helpful thing at the time when in 2018 when it went was the support I received from people. It was the advice, the information, and the support from those around me, from medical staff, from social support, from charities, because when it hit relatively quickly. Over the course of 3 months, I went from basically normal vision to not having anything, and wasn't really something I could prepare for. So a lot of that early time was spent understanding and discovering really what this was and what it meant, and having those people there so that I wasn't doing it completely on my own was invaluable to helping me kind of come to terms with what had happened and what I had and show me where I could go from there. I discovered this entire community of people, of experts and people with lived experience who could show me that this wasn't the end of me doing anything, that I really could carry on. And without those people and that support, I could very well have not been in the position I'm in today.
Now, when it comes to diabetes, obviously there's a few types of diabetes and various differences as to how you have to manage your individual diabetes situation. But in your case, how do you manage the diabetes side of your condition?
I'm a what they call a type 1. I'm dependent on manual injections of insulin, which is it's the more common type for children and young people. To get type 2 diabetes can be more based on sort of diet, lifestyle and health, but generally affects people later on. But type 1 is sort of the children's one. So I regularly have to test the levels of sugar in my bloodstream and regularly inject insulin to balance out that level. And quite luckily, more recent advances in technology have actually made it a lot easier with the sight loss. Previously, the way I would test the glucose in my bloodstream was to do a finger prick test. You get a small needle, essentially, and get a spot of blood on the end of a finger, and you place that drop into a little sensor that then scans it and gives you a reading. Now, something that's very difficult to do when you can't see any of it. It's a very precise process. And I had some sort of incidents after losing my sight where I tried to continue doing it that way. And I would miss the sensor. I would miss the right section of my finger. I wouldn't be able to read the result. It was becoming very frustrating. So recent advances mean that I now wear a what they call a constant glucose monitoring system, which is a sensor that I wear on the back of my arm, which sends a signal to my mobile phone. And by checking an app on my mobile, I can get a reading of the glucose in my bloodstream, either by scanning that sensor with the back of the phone itself, or just by reading the last sort of sensor data. So it's completely eliminated the need for manual finger pricks and blood tests, and has made managing the condition with sight loss so much easier, and allowed me to really regain control of it, because I can monitor it much more closely.
So when it comes to the sensor and the app you are using, what are they called? Can you share some names?
The one I use is called a Freestyle Libre system. The other sort of, I think, common one is Dexcom, I think is the other name that people may have heard of. But the Freestyle Libre and Dexcom are these two wearable sensors. They're about The sensors are a disc, are probably about an inch across, very lightweight, and they sit and stick on the back of your arm, and they're applied with this little spring-loaded applicator, and they currently last about 2 weeks, so you do have to replace them. But once they're on, it's a very simple process to either put the back of your phone against the sensor to get a reading, or just to open the app and check what the last sensor reading was. It eliminates any invasive like testing or, you know, drawing blood or anything that we used to do. And all of the results in the app are sent directly to my consultant team. So at any time, I can speak to them and they can directly access the data and give me advice or information on what they see or what to do if they see something that's maybe a little bit outside the norm, or they see something that's a trend. We can suggest ways to combat that, or things I might be able to change to try and bring something down. So that instant ability to check the data is another reason why I like using this system.
And in terms of the app, what's the app called and how accessible do you find it?
The app is called LibreLink. It works. I use it. So I'm a screen reader user. So my phone, you know, codes and reads out the information audibly. And a large portion of the data is very usable. The app will give me a number value for that glucose reading. There is extra information that's visual. I believe the numbers are color coded depending on whether you're what the app considers to be in range or out of range. There are also, I believe, directional arrows which tell you whether the level is rising or falling. Unfortunately, at the moment, those don't translate very well into an audio feedback. But knowing the number and being able to see that the logbook is sufficient for me to track and to follow, and then the other information can be converted to graphs if the consultants need to look at something or want to see a visual representation. But for me, just being able to know that figure is enough to track everything.
Fantastic. And the last question for you is, you know, for people new to sight loss, based on your own experiences of adapting to life with limited sight, what would be your advice to people?
The big thing that I realized and that I accepted and that helped me to come to terms with both the diabetes and the sight loss is that point I mentioned earlier. It's that there are lots of people around who can help, that have advice, that have experience, and there is absolutely nothing wrong with seeking that experience and finding out ways that people have done things and what support is out there. I've got a really good team in my diabetes consultants. We speak relatively often, and sometimes working out the ways to do things with the sight loss on top has been quite interesting to look at new ways of doing things that they maybe hadn't thought of, because while sight loss and diabetes are relatively closely connected, there aren't that many cases for each individual consultancy or area. So giving them some extra knowledge and helping them understand how things work to potentially help the next person that comes to them might be able to make it easier. They might know what technologies to suggest, or they might have got some more information. So I think, again, that people connection, that sharing information and seeking help and not being afraid to seek help, is probably the thing that helped me the most when it was new. And I'm still always learning new things and can only do that by talking to people and finding out their experiences.
That is excellent. Well, thank you very much for sharing your experiences, Lee, both from the sight loss and the diabetes side, and I think helping to certainly raise much more awareness of these things. Thank you very much, Lee Mercer, for joining us here on RNIB Connect Radio.
The presents have been unwrapped, the Christmas washing up is all done, and now it's time to sink into the couch and watch a great movie. Do you go yippee-ki-yay for Die Hard?
Come out to the coast, we'll get together, have a few laughs.
Do you delve into hot chocolate with Elf?
Buddy the Elf, what's your favourite colour? Put that down.
Or are you a bit of a traditionalist?
Step this way, Mr. Coletti, please.
It's only once a year, sir. It won't be repeated.
Still unsure? Well, why not join me, Alan Russell, and the gang Christmas Day, 8 a.m, and we'll give you our top tips for your Christmas picks.
Season's greetings from everyone at RNIB Connect Radio.
Christmas is a time for giving and sharing. I'd like to share some acoustic presents with you this Christmas. So if you enjoy the music of Nora Jones, Sir Rod Stewart, Mike Oldfield, Donovan, Paul Simon, Chris de Burgh, Eva Cassidy, and many more, then join me for these acoustic presents on RNIB Connect Radio, 7 p.m. on December the 23rd, 8 p.m. on December the 24th, or 8 p.m. on December the 28th. It's always nice to share presents.
This is Tech Talk on RNIB Connect Radio.
RNIB's Joe Kenny has been speaking to the team behind the MyCare app, which is available in Northern Ireland and allows you to access your medical records.
I'm thrilled to welcome Dr. Neil Black, who's head of the regional MyCare group here in Northern Ireland. Neil, you're very welcome.
Thanks, Joe. It's great to be here.
Did I get your role correct there?
Just about right.
Just about right. So I suppose, first of all, we're going to chat about MyCare and Encompass and digital health records, etc. It's a massive subject, I know. And a lot of people are thinking, what does it all mean and why is that important to me? And hopefully, Neil's going to explain a little bit more about this today. And as a patient, what it opens up for us, isn't that right?
That's right. I'm very happy to do that.
Super. I suppose, firstly, tell me a little bit about your role, Neil. What do you do from day to day, if you like? I mean, that's a very, very big question.
Yeah, I'm a consultant physician practicing in endocrinology and diabetes and general internal medicine based in the hospital. I'm based in Alden Galvin Hospital in Derry, Londonderry. I've been a practicing clinician and a consultant now for over 16 years. And I've been involved helping look after people with long-term conditions, and that's helped me understand the value of sharing information with people.
And I suppose moving on into, am I right in calling it MyCare? It goes by several names, doesn't it?
It does indeed, which really does not help get the message across.
Indeed.
So there are four names to think about. There's Epic, Encompass, MyChart and MyCare. MyCare is the app through which you can access some of your healthcare information. The app itself, when you download it, however, is called MyChart. So you download the MyChart application onto your phone, and then you have access to MyCare. This gives you access to parts of the record that are used by clinicians, and that's medical and nursing and other professionals. Mm-hmm. And they use the Encompass system that's provided by the company called Epic. Epic is used in many, many different countries across the world. It's an American company, and all of Northern Ireland now, in all the Northern Ireland hospitals are using Epic. And we've called the programme to implement that Encompass. That's a programme that's been going on from a few years now, and the first trust went live with the Southeastern Trust 2 years ago this month, then the Belfast Trust, Northern Trust, and finally, just in May this year, the Western and Southern Trusts. So if you've had any episodes, inpatient or outpatient, since your trust went live, your Encompass record, your healthcare record, will contain information about those new episodes, whether it's letters or results. And whenever you open up the app, you'll be able to see that information from go live.
So, I mean, I suppose for me anyway, I'm sure a lot of people are the same. It didn't really mean anything until I had to visit the hospital. And I love the fact that I was able to, well, first of all, I was able to do the pre-visit checklist. Mm-hmm. What's that actually called? I'm not sure what it's called. But basically, I was able to do that on the app myself. And then I was able to see the letter that came from that appointment. I was able to read the letter and all the kind of the points that were kind of arising from the appointment. It was really quite game-changing for me.
That's really good to hear. I mean, whenever you work so hard on something, to realise that it actually is felt to be worthwhile by people using the system is the reason that it exists in the first place. Your record won't contain much information until you've had an episode, whether it's an admission to hospital or an outpatient episode, but there's information that will be available straight away once you've attended.
I suppose that's the biggest thing. People go like, well, I went on there and there's nothing on there. Well, if you're perfectly healthy and you haven't visited the hospital, there won't be, I suppose.
Oh, absolutely. Although there will be things like, even if you have had no admissions or outpatient attendances and maybe no healthcare problems before, if you open up the app, it will give information about the name of your general practitioner, for instance, and things like other contact details and healthcare contact details, and you can enter some information yourself.
Speaking of that too, one of the biggest things for me and other blind people, I'm sure, you're able to set your communication preferences, aren't you?
Yes, absolutely. At the moment, if you have MyCare and you've keep notifications open. Whenever any letter is generated within the system, whether it's an outpatient letter is a very good example, that will come to you and you will get a notification to tell you that your outpatient letter is now available. Now, trusts, we're hoping to get to a position that as the trusts get all comfortable with things, that what will happen is that at the moment they still post out the letter. But if you have MyCare, you'll be able to view this in a better way and read it electronically, whether that's using your vision or whether it's using a reader that will read it out to you.
Mm-hmm.
What I would hope is that we can get to a position that maybe to reduce usage of paper, for instance, that we'll have digital first. And what will happen there is that you'll get a notification that your letter is available. The service will then, 2 weeks after that or so, if you haven't accessed that, only then will they post out the letter. But, I mean, Joe, you've said that the preference for people with visual impairments is to receive their letters electronically so they can then use different aids to be able to pick up the information from what the content is.
Absolutely, because I think a lot of people certainly... people who maybe aren't familiar with some of the assistive technology that blind and partially sighted people use somehow think that, you know, well, if it's on a email or a web-based format or something, then it would be difficult for us to read. But actually, that opens it up for us to read. It makes it way easier because then you've got screen readers, as you say, VoiceOver or JAWS or NVDA maybe. And then you've got all the zoom and magnification software on iPads and tablets and phones. Mm-hmm. So it opens it up to, like, anyone be able to read it, and obviously that will benefit people with perfect sight as well, wouldn't it?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there's complete advantage to the things that are necessary for people with significant visual impairments can really help those who have smaller degrees of visual impairment, and actually those that are a little bit more frail and a little bit slower at things can find it an awful lot easier. So these adaptations in moving the records to electronic forms and allowing access to those things are helpful for everyone.
Yeah, as I say, for me, it's a thing of we've lived all our lives with, you know, traditional paper-based records and the limitations or whatever of those.
Mm-hmm.
And now this is a kind of a brave new era, isn't it? Where, you know, there's new technology, new steps been made.
Yeah, it is. I mean, and talking to you, Joe, I mean, it's quite clear that this is a massive step forward, particularly for people with visual impairments. And it's definitely in the best interest of every person with a visual impairment that they download the app and get access.
Can you access it if you don't have a phone? I don't know. Does anybody not have a phone anymore? Maybe you don't. But can you get access via a computer or...
Yes, you can. Yeah. You can log into MyChart via a computer browser.
Ah,
and of course, okay. Gives you a much bigger screen and ability to manipulate it as well with different tools.
Oh, that's good too. What about if I'm a parent and my kids are, you know, obviously under the age of, under 18 or whatever? Can I get sort of? Can I see their records as well?
You can't until you get what's called proxy access.
Uh-huh.
If, for instance, and the easiest way to do this would be whenever you're at an appointment with a healthcare or social care professional with the child, and it's very clear what your relationship is, you're trusted, the healthcare or social care professional can grant you access.
Yeah.
Now, you would need to open your own account first as well, so that you can be easily found within the system. And then that will be an extension of your account. You can view the other person's account. It's important because then that you can't access your own account through without using identity verification and through logins and biometric access,
yes.
such as facial or thumbprint recognition. Mm-hmm. But that puts their record behind the protections that your account also has. So the healthcare or social care professional can find you because you're in the system already when they go into your child's account and can grant you access. There is a second way in that even though the child is young, they may be competent and mature enough to decide themselves, and a health or social care professional can verify that and then give them the ability to decide who has access to their record, and they can then grant the parent access or withdraw it.
Indeed. I'm just thinking about them, like maybe teenagers, et cetera.
Yes. Well, yeah. there is an automatic revoking whenever the person reaches the age of 16.
Indeed. Yeah.
Because at that stage, that person is legal majority. So you lose the proxy access as a parent, but then it's up to the child to decide to re-grant it to you.
Indeed. I suppose just on that, it would be remiss of me not to mention, I mean, obviously, from what you've said already, data security is paramount, isn't it? It really is a major consideration here.
Yeah, there's a real balance, and Northern Ireland law is slightly different from the rest of the UK or Irish law. Before we went live, we actually took advice from the Department of Legal Services in Northern Ireland about what the actual legal context was. And it was very clear there was a tension between people's right to access their information and protection of that information. Mm-hmm. And that's why the access to the record is, you have to verify your identity through NI Direct before you can then access your account. And that's the approved Northern Ireland Public Service way of verifying identity at the moment. So it's very important that we grant people access because they have a right, but we protect that as much as possible.
And I mean, I'm just going to say it, it's not without its difficulty, that NI Direct method, but there is support available, isn't there?
Yeah, it is. I mean, a lot of people do have accounts from back in the time of the pandemic for accessing COVID tests and also vaccines.
That's true.
And showing the vaccines. But that could be awkward. It requires a visual ID, such as a driver's license or a passport. And not everybody has those things, especially young people. So that can be difficult. And they're still working on a way, for instance, to provide ID for those that are below the age where they can get a driving license, or perhaps even that they have a passport. Mm. So that can be difficult, and it can be awkward as well. And you might have to contact the NI Direct help desk, for instance, to get your account sorted before you can then access my care.
I suppose you've alluded to it there. If we do, there's a helpline, isn't there? And if you need further information about my care, and I suppose what that can mean for you. Is there details and contact details, etc.?
Yeah, there's a, besides the NI Direct helpline, there's a My Care direct help desk, and that's not an AI operated thing. It's got actual people there.
Oh, excellent.
So yes, there's a telephone number if you want, and an email if you want. I could read those out for you.
Sure, yes, just go for that.
Yes, yeah. The telephone number is 028-9536-8180. Or the email is mycarehelpdesk@hscni.net. That's mycarehelpdesk@hscni.net. And that's open Monday to Friday, 9 to 5 p.m.
Super. We'll share these, obviously, on the RNABNI social media feeds as well, around about the time this podcast is going out and after our visit today. One thing we always ask our guests before I let you go and let you back into the wild, it's called our magic wand question. So if you had a magic wand today, what one thing would you do which would improve the lives of blind and partially sighted people?
I think the things that are done to help blind or partially sighted people are the things that help everybody. And the example was in Alton Galvin Hospital. has grown dramatically in the last decade with addition of new wings. So a junction that was just previously took you to one place, you know, in one direction, could lead you to several different areas now. Mm-hmm. And they changed the size of the lettering of the signs, made them consistent and brought them down to eye level. So you can go right up.
Yes.
And what we found was I found it easier to get around the hospital, even though this was there for those with more visual impairment. So I think changes in signage and any adjustments that need to be made for partially sighted people help everybody, because we have to remember that there are some people who are perhaps a little bit more physically frail and maybe a little bit slower in making their way around and have to think a little bit more as well. And that produces somewhat similar difficulties to having partial visual impairment.
Mm-hmm.
So these are just good things to do, and they help everybody, even someone who is perfectly clear of mind and perfectly sighted will be helped by making things more clear.
Yeah, absolutely. We would be at RNAB, we're very keen that there's no point having something for a blind person if it's going to create more barriers for other groups. Like, that would not be something that we would support. So yeah, absolutely. If it's going to be supportive of a person with, say, a vision loss, well, if it's going to help other groups as well, so much the better.
Absolutely. I think so. Completely agree.
Mm-hmm. Neil, before I let you go, give us those contact details one more time before we close up. But thank you so much for your time today.
Okay, so absolutely, thank you. The telephone line is 028-9536-8180, and that telephone line help desk is available Monday to Friday, 9 to 5 p.m. But there's also an email you could send at any time of the day or night. Obviously, you know, it'll be responded to within working hours. And that's mycarehelpdesk@hscni.net, mycarehelpdesk, all is typed as one word, @hscni.net.
That's brilliant, Neil. Thank you so much indeed.
And that's it from us this week. Thank you so much, as always, for joining us. If you want to get in contact with us, please do. We always love to hear from you. techtalk@rnib.org.uk is our email address. Voice notes or written emails, always welcome. We'll be back with you next week for our Christmas special, of course. Looking forward to that. But in the meantime, from me, Callum Stoneman, Hubert Pavalkovich, and Jackie Brown, bye for now.
Goodbye.
Bye for now.
Bye-bye.